those who can hear me, I say, do not despair. The misery that is now upon us is but the passing of greed, the bitterness of men who fear the way of human progress. The hate of men will pass and dictators die, and the power they took from the people will return to the people. And so long as men die, liberty will never perish. Soldiers, don't give yourselves to brutes. Men who despise you, enslave you, who regiment your lives, tell you what to do, what to think, and what to feel, who drill you, diet you, treat you like cattle, use you as cannon fodder. Don't give yourselves to these unnatural men, machine men with machine minds and machine hearts. You are not machines. You are not cattle. You are men.
Welcome, everybody. This is Room Tone, the radio show. We talk movies because we love it. Here we are today, extremely beautiful sunny day, broadcasting from Ancienne Masculine on 101.9 FM CITR Radio. Let's get right to it. I'm very happy, very excited to introduce to the world out there, everybody, please welcome with a nice warm round of applause, Ali Berubens, Latina Pacheva, how are you doing?
Yay, we're good. Happy to be here.
Right on. Welcome in, and let's do it. Let's talk movies. There is a lot to talk about. Here we are in 2018. So much to talk about in the summer of 2018 here in Vancouver. First of all, I want to just give you the chance to introduce yourselves and just who are you as Ali Berubens, Latina Pacheva. Who are you?
Two local filmmakers.
I'll introduce Ali. And then she can introduce me.
Sounds good.
If you want to do that, yeah.
Sounds good.
Just because I love her. So Ali is a very multidisciplinary filmmaker, very skilled in many different ways in film. I first met her in a directing context. We had planned to co-direct a Story Hive project together, and from there we built this beautiful friendship. She's now my little sister, even though she's way wiser than I am. Her brain is like a candy store. I've never met someone with such quirky, interesting ideas. And she graduated from VFS last year and now owns her own company, Studio Niche. And she's really passionate about sustainable filmmaking.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that.
Right on. Ali, you wanna go for it? For Zlatina as well?
Yeah, yeah.
Zlatina, awesome.
Yeah, so I met Zlatina, from Story Hive. We were going to direct together. That didn't end up actually happening, but our friendship flourished from there. Z is a local writer. She's director of Vancouver Short Film Fest, one of the directors. She's marketing coordinator for Rain Dance and local vampire. And you can often find her on any set or just helping out in any way in the indie industry, which is really awesome. And she's just the best person I know, pretty much.
Wonderful. That's awesome right there. Now I want to ask you, why Vancouver? You know, there is so much, of course, so much happening here, but there is definitely a reason why now and here. And I'd like to know from the both of you why.
Yeah. Well, I grew up here. My parents came here as students, actually studied in UBC, so I grew up on this campus. But Vancouver's film industry is just booming right now. There have been opportunities where I've wanted to leave and could have left, but I think I've realized that it's more fruitful to stay here and really learn from the industry here.
For sure, for sure. For me, I moved out here for school, VFS, and I went back home for 2 months, and I debated moving to Europe and all this, and I kind of realized once you have a hub here and once you have friendships in the film industry, it's kind of like, it's nothing that you can really do alone. You have to be a team. And once you kind of find your team, it's kind of hard to leave. I think that Vancouver is a great place to be in for film, especially in Canada. I think I'd rather be in Vancouver than Toronto because we have all the nature as well.
And we're so close to LA. So, production's come up and we can learn from those professionals is great.
Very interesting. You mentioned the community, and it's a very intimate community here in Vancouver, especially, but very diverse. And I think that's the strength of it.
That's amazing, yeah.
Where do you see the community in maybe 5 years from now?
Good question. Well, I feel like so many young people coming straight out of film school, they're from all around the world because VFS has a very diverse population from what I've learned. They're kind of just entering the film force. So I feel like now in 5 years, they're going to really start elevating their own voices and they're going to have the skills to really push their own projects, which is going to make for some really diverse I think, films and mm-hmm. projects and mm-hmm. stories.
Yeah, and I think that Canada's just kind of, like, figuring out what it is as a country as well, because it's so young still. So I feel like in film as well, like, we're just going to have so many different cultures coming out of mm-hmm. Canada and out of Vancouver, and... yeah, it's going to be really interesting in 5 years, actually. I'm very excited to see what happens.
Yeah, eyes open, yeah. ears open, every
yeah. Open to anything, yeah.
Yes, no shields at all. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it could be no limits. And I think that's why people are so excited to be here, mm-hmm. you know? Everything is just happening so quickly, and we like that. We yeah. love that. We love
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and you know what? Actually, I find it very interesting, like, coming out of VFS especially. Like, there's so many different cultures coming out of there that the films you make have so many different aspects of different cultures and different, like, personalities mm. and styles, which is really great.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And with that, I actually want to ask you how the both of you met. How did you meet?
I'll give you the reins.
Okay. Yeah, we met through a mutual friend who brought mm-hmm. us together to co-direct or potentially co-direct, more pitch, yeah. A Story Hive project for the Female Directors Edition. We didn't end up getting the grant, but I think the friendship that we built was way more rewarding.
Yeah, sure.
And so since then, yeah, I've feel like I've known Allie for a really long time, even though it's only been about 2 years. Mm-hmm. She's really easy to talk to, and she's got a very creative, sensitive brain and heart, and she does amazing work. So I was like, I'm keeping her.
It was kind of funny because I was producing one of the episodics for VFS, and yeah, our mutual friend was like, I'm interested in, like, having you direct something with me, and he was like, by the way, it's going to be co-directed, are you cool with that? And I was like, oh, I've never co-directed, and that's a very sensitive thing as well, directing, because you're putting your heart out there. So having Z and, like, meeting her, I was like, okay, like, this actually works, like, this is so interesting to meet somebody so in tune with you.
Yeah, we had a good connection.
Yeah,
and
so
we were, I think a lot of times co-directors can butt heads, especially if they don't know each other,
yeah.
but we were, like, able to listen to each other and
immediately
really, yeah, it so. Was crazy. It was like a blind date.
It was.
That turned out really well.
It was.
It's pretty special. Life is the art of meeting. So there you go.
Yeah.
That was really neat. And yeah. with that, I actually want to ask you your opinion on women in film right now.
Ooh.
Very interesting
Hot
topic.
Button.
And
I'm
very excited because there's so many leading, there's so much presence,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah.
in the culture of filmmaking from women, especially right now, that is growing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really excited. How do you feel about it? Where do you see yourself fitting that big picture?
It's exciting. It's exciting to see. Whenever I work on a project, if I'm producing or writing it, I make a point of finding as many women that have the skills to work on it first
yeah,
as possible. I'm never going to kind of pick people just because of their gender or their ethnicity. Like, I'll pick them based on their skills, of course. But I also think that it's important to represent the communities that are underrepresented in cinema. So I think it's exciting, and I think we're making strides. We just have to keep pushing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting what you said about trying to get as many women as you can on your set. I'll do the same, but I noticed that, I mean, a lot of our friends and a lot of the people we do work with are men.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually read this thing the other day, and this girl was like, oh man, like, when I want to say something as a director, I feel like I have to be speaking out of, like, a speakerphone to be able to say the thing I want to say, when a man can just kind of
mm-hmm.
just say it. And it's yeah, it's really interesting because I feel like guys in film, they kind of buddy up.
Mm.
Like, they're buddy-buddy, and then I feel like a lot of the time girls feel like they have to prove themselves a lot harder. And I feel like right now, though, it's starting to become a little more chill about...
I think it's also, like, the funding bodies are saying, okay, we're going to give 50% of the money to female-driven projects.
Yeah.
So people are becoming more open to it, and they're realizing that, yeah, there's value in having women on your set,
mm-hmm.
of course.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been really lucky that all of the men that I've worked with have been so supportive.
Exactly, yeah.
And,
like,
yeah.
They're so supportive in Vancouver as well, which
mm-hmm.
is awesome.
I believe there is an aspect to actual energy,
yeah.
I believe, you know? The I've been on sets where it's just males, but it's different.
Mm-hmm.
You need that female energy. You need a good balance to be able to really achieve that creative, to live in that creative space.
Absolutely,
yeah,
it's definitely something that goes beyond what you can, you know, you can just see on set. You
yeah.
just feel it right
you
away.
Feel it for
yeah.
sure.
And it's important to celebrate that for mm-hmm. sure. The big thing now is, as you mentioned, there is a lot of funding coming in for for female filmmakers, film producers, film directors. This is the best time to be a female creator in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. What's your next step in Vancouver?
Well, I have a few projects that I'm pitching to some of the funding bodies. So Canada Council and CBC and Creative BC have their new fund. So we're going to try for that as well. I'm still just working on short films, just learning more about that. And then writing as much as I can. That's where I live, is in the writing sphere. So
Hey, why don't you tell us a little bit about your experience as a writer?
Oh, well, it hasn't been that long. It's only been about a year and a half or so that I've been writing. But it's been great. People have been really supportive. We just did a Crazy Eights, actually, Ali and I together, this past season.
The script was great.
<Thank you. laughs> Yeah, it was called Extraordinary Amy. And I had a lot of support. I was able to send it off to a bunch of different people, and they gave me advice. They gave me notes. And actually, I'm working right now with Marshall Exani, who is an amazing filmmaker in the city, and he wanted to start a new writers group. So it's kind of still in the early stages, but once I have more information for that, I'll share it on social media.
Very interesting. Definitely the community of writers is growing as well. Mm-hmm. I know that there's a company called My Tribe Productions, and shout out to Rowan Jing.
They do
script reading workshops. That's definitely a great place to be, both as a writer but also as an actor and director in general. So many interesting dynamics happening in there.
Absolutely,
shout out. And I actually want to ask Ali, Green Ambassador. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Huh? Why don't you tell us a little bit more about that? That's very, very cool. Very powerful. Very powerful.
So, yeah, I was telling you earlier, if I wasn't in film, I would be doing conservation. It's just something that I really, really care about. And I was just kind of like looking up what I can do to be like a clean filmmaker, like a sustainable filmmaker, like less waste, essentially. And I popped up on this carbon literacy course at CBC?
Creative BC.
Creative BC. It's early. I took the course. It's free. Anybody can take it. I think they have it about once a month. And after that, I was like, oh, this is really cool. I met some green ambassadors, and I was like, oh, I kind of like want to become a green ambassador. So you have to kind of pitch to them. You kind of have to give like things that you're going to do to kind of help out in the green filmmaking community. And you know, try your best to tell people about all these courses and tell people like what you can do. And
What's the number one thing someone can do to have a sustainable film set? Because I'm curious.
You know what? So
of much course, waste.
You know what? I think that the number one thing is less waste with paper. Like paper is the worst. Like scripts and call sheets and stuff. Nobody really uses them. Okay, so if you're gonna send it, like do it through email. You're fine with that. Like VFS. Sorry, VFS. It's very wasteful with paper. My friend Daniel, he started an app called Circus. And that's like an online onboarding site where you can do like all of your paperwork. It's really great. I think that's like such a amazing app. Like, kudos to him, because that's the first step, I think, is less waste with paper. Like, and like, you know, water bottles, like bring your own water bottles and your own coffee cups. People just like leave them all around, and it's so like annoying and upsetting to me, actually.
Very true. Very true. Yeah. Oh, wow. There is a lot to talk about in that.
Oh, there is, for sure.
And I know that, I mean, we've been talking about a lot already, but I know that we still have so much more to explore. And then we're gonna explore the horizon, and then we're going to go deeper. Now exploring the horizon, as Latina, I know you're involved in the Vancouver Short Film Festival.
It's my third year with the festival, second year as a co-director with Marina Dix. It's an amazing thing. I have had so much fun with it. I started as a programming or submissions coordinator, and so I kind of helped with watching all the films. And then I came on as co-director, making the festival happen. We showcase BC films, so it's only BC filmmakers that can submit. And last year, I think we screened about 38 films. We just started a new horror genre screening, because that's what I love. Marina was like, why don't we screen some horror movies? I was like, yes, we should.
Can I ask something about that? So when you say BC films, do you have to be a resident too?
You have So one person, at least one person on your team has to have had a BC address when you were shooting the film.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we, one year we had a film actually from China, but their composer was from here. And it was a great film. People loved it. So we programmed it.
Nice. Interesting. What's, as a programmer watching so many movies.
Yeah.
What's the ingredient or what's the special spark that draws the movie in? If I can ask.
Well, for me.
Yeah, for you, of course.
I always gauge movies based on how, if they make me cry.
So if a movie, right on.
If a movie makes me cry, then I'm like, yes, this is the one. But I mean, I cry about everything. I cry during Walmart commercials. So I think as long as it has the heart, the beating heart, it can be about anything. We had a really cool experimental one a couple years ago. I can't remember the name now anymore. But it was about the filmmaker's sister who had almost committed suicide or who had attempted suicide, and it was just visuals with a voiceover, and it was really beautiful, and that just really, it sits with you when you feel it. Yeah, then you know. Yeah,
it's all about the feeling.
Mm-hmm.
The invisible that makes us visible. Right on.
Ooh, yeah.
And Ali, I know that you have your own production company.
Yeah,
Studio Niche.
Yeah.
How about that adventure coming out of VFS and exploring the world and putting your name out there?
Okay, so I started Studio Niche as a sole proprietorship when I was in VFS because I just wanted the namesake to be on to be on all of my films. And then when I got out of VFS, I started art direction and production design. And I was like, hey, no, like, I want to direct. And the only way I'm going to direct this young or this soon or as a female is to make sure I do it myself. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of started pitching to musicians, to commercial, to companies for commercials, and then I found bands that will just keep me. Mm-hmm. And then as well, my company also does graphic design and marketing, social marketing and stuff like that. So that also keeps me busy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wonderful, wonderful adventure for sure.
Yeah.
Getting to create and carve your own space into the industry. What were the major challenges for you when creating Studio Niche?
I think, you know what? Actually, I have to say, I've been pretty lucky. Mm-hmm. I haven't had too many challenges yet. But there are challenges in the fact that you have to know that at some point maybe you're not going to be working as much, and you do have to prove yourself a lot. I work basically 7 to 9 every day, even on weekends sometimes, because you have to make sure that you're putting your best effort into it. So that is a challenge. I mean, I'm quite young and I'm still I'm working all the time, but
mm-hmm.
I'd say that's the challenge. And also just being a female sometimes and a young one, a lot of my clients are this is who is meeting me right now. Yeah, so that too. But no, actually, it's been pretty good. It's been pretty good.
Nice. Very happy to hear this extremely saturated collection of colors, you know. It's very, lots of energy here. Any final thoughts before we get to the break and then we go deeper into the sea?
Keep making movies, everyone. At least for the short film fest, I want to see them. So.
Actually, we'll get to the details of that later on, right after the break. This is actually a soundtrack. I want to know later after the break, I'm going to ask you why you chose this soundtrack.
Yeah.
This is the soundtrack of Death Proof. It's a movie by Quentin Tarantino. The name of this song is Chick Habit. Everybody enjoy.
You're gonna see.
Wow, wow. Welcome back. This is Room Tone, the radio show. We talk movies because we love it. Let me ask you, why this soundtrack?
Oh, man. I mean, who doesn't like Tarantino, first of all? Is
my mic? Yeah. Go for it. Go for it.
Who doesn't like Tarantino, first of all? And, like, really cool girls in muscle cars.
Yeah.
I just thought
badass
that, like,
women.
Kind of, like, female podcast, female movie. Yeah. And Tarantino, though.
People always say that Death Proof isn't one of his best movies, but I would argue that it
is. Yeah, you know what? It's so underrated, but yeah. I love it.
It's so good.
Yeah.
So.
Right on.
Yeah.
Screw the haters.
You know what? Let's get to the details of the actual Vancouver Shore Film Festival.
Sure, yeah.
Why not sharing with the people out there, what about the deadline and the technical stuff for filmmakers that want to submit their movie?
Yes. So you can submit your films on Film Freeway. If you just go to our website at www.vsff.com, that'll take you to Film Freeway. You can see some of the other films that we've programmed in the past. And it's $25 for students, $35. Oh no, $20 for students, $30 for professionals, and submissions close on October 12th.
Okay.
The actual festival is in 2019 in January.
Okay.
So
we have some time.
Ways. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Right on. It's again such a sparkling time right now. So many film festivals.
I know.
We have the Vancouver Asian Film Festivals. Of course, VIFF is taking. Doxa is approaching.
Yes.
So much happening. What is the one thing that Vancouver is still missing?
That's a great question. I think more local funding.
Mm.
StoryHive is great for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, StoryHive is great. I think maybe something that isn't as like voting like based though, because I feel like when you have to do all this like pitching, it almost kind of deters from the story and the heart of it.
Yeah.
It becomes more of a competition. I think we need something that's a little more laid back.
Totally.
Thank you for saying that. Yeah. How do you feel about that, Selena?
I agree completely. I mean, Harold Greenberg and Bell Media, I think, just had a new grant as well. But I had like 30 friends at least that applied and none of us got it. So I'm curious to see who did.
Yeah.
And congratulations to them.
Yeah, congrats.
Yeah, it's a very interesting topic. I remember actually talking about this before on this radio show, and it goes back to, you know, who's making the decisions, who's choosing. Because in the end, the possibility to make a project, it's huge.
Yeah.
It can really change your career and in the way you are perceived in the industry and in the community. And even, you know, looking at the butterfly effect, imagine a whole project, what it could do to you and your the closest friends.
Exactly.
So those decisions, the people who take those decisions, just let me hug you with a little bit of that awareness, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Just become aware of the power that is in your choice, even in the smallest choice. And I think we can transfer that as well in the choices as a programmer, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. As a programmer, I'm often, like, I'm watching for the best stories, but I'm also thinking about who made the project and who was working on it. And oftentimes, I think festivals will program things from filmmakers that they've already programmed before because they know that they make good stuff. For me, I'm not looking for that. I'm looking for like the up and coming filmmakers who haven't screened at a festival yet, because it's important to give those people opportunities.
Yeah, I think that's really good to like give them a break.
Mm-hmm.
Opportunity.
I couldn't imagine actually how hard that is to
It's hard.
Choose. Oh, no.
It's really hard.
Yeah.
There's a lot of talent in BC.
There is.
You said something very, the key from there is opportunity.
Yeah.
And with that, I actually want to ask, what's the biggest opportunity you've ever had?
That's a great question. I think for me recently, it was Crazy Eights.
Yeah,
that was a big opportunity.
Crazy Eight is like pretty intense. And like Z, yeah, she wrote this script and basically everybody was basically on there because we love Z so much and we wanted to like help her make this thing. And actually, yeah, Crazy Eights is like a full on...
It's crazy.
Film.
It
and
actually is crazy.
There's a screening and a red carpet and everything. And I was like, wow. Like, I was like looking at Z, like, I'm so proud.
Yeah. Couldn't have done it without you.
Yes. How was your experience?
For the Crazy Eights?
Yeah.
Well, I production managed. So I did a lot. It was more like behind the scenes paperwork and emailing. But I learned a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I really learned a lot. So.
I did too. I helped post-production assist, kind of. And that's the one thing I took away from the Crazy Eights experience is have your whole post-production team ready to go right after you're done shooting. Because that was so valuable and we got the film done. I've had projects that drain on for like years because we don't have the right people on board right away. And it's hard when people are volunteering or getting paid low prices. So yeah, just have your team on.
That's preparation.
Reliable people. Yeah. Yes.
Planning.
That's one really good thing about Crazy Eights. Well, good and intense, because it's Crazy Eights. You do it in 8 days, so you have to edit like right away.
Yeah.
So yeah, like I think that'd be really good, because we even have a film that's like almost being finished editing.
It's
like,
almost there.
what about that like film?
Ooh.
Yeah.
Allie?
So basically, when I write, I take things out of my life, like things that are kind of bothering me or I'm really interested at the time. And I was on Instagram, and there's this thing basically called an Instagram girl, like the really popular Instagram models. And I was looking at them, and I was starting to feel like weirdly self-conscious a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. And I was like messaging Z about that, and then I found this page that would show their photo before and then their edited photo after.
Ooh.
And I was like, ooh, this is very interesting, because it was kind of showing me like, oh, these people aren't really what I'm looking at online. Like, life is very different online. So I wrote this script. I mean, it's like more art housey, so it's not like literal.
It's really cool.
But I wrote this script. Basically, the meaning behind it is that like no matter what you change on the outside, it's never really going to change how you feel on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
Like they could keep getting surgeries, they could buy all these fancy things, do this all these things, and show this to the world. But at the end of the day, I don't think that any of those people are necessarily happy with themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what my story is about, is just to find like happiness in yourself and other things, not your outer appearance.
Yeah, we go back to self-love over there, I feel, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably the biggest, the strongest fuel of all.
Yeah.
You know. And thank you for mentioning that, because I feel that presence of layers is what creates problems in our society, you know.
Oh, it's
too many layers.
Mm-hmm.
It's a common thing. I think that's honestly, we're human, so I think that we're always going to feel a little self-conscious. It's just being aware of that and being like, okay, that's okay that one day I will feel like this, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think yeah
and knowing that things we see, especially online,
aren't necessarily true. Yeah.
Well, they have to go through so many steps
yeah.
before actually being shared on the internet, you know.
There
it's already a filter to have a whole body, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So your truth self, you're still actually looking for it.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise you wouldn't even be here. And then you have your body, which is a filter, and then you have your the perception of yourself, which is another filter.
Yeah.
You know, and then it goes on and on.
Yeah.
And by the time you get out there, you are your environment.
Yes.
And with that, I want to ask the both of you, you know, how do you reconnect with your inner child?
I think that Zlatina and I are both very much children still, like our souls. Like we're old people.
We're
old
young.
Souls, but young. Like we're always.
We're really weird.
Yeah.
Which I like. I like people I can be weird around.
Yeah. You know what? It's important to like go play at parks and like,
yeah.
It's important to just like hang out without your technology and I don't know, like it's important to just, I hang out with my nephew a lot,
yeah.
And I play like a kid with him,
yeah.
And that's how I connect with that, because I'm like, wow, he's 2 years old, so he's in a point where he's just like, doesn't know anything bad yet, and
mm-hmm.
he just has fun in the moment he's in, and that's kind of how I connect with myself as a child.
I think, yeah, two creatives naturally keep that inner child inside them, and that's where the whole concept of like play comes into play.
Oh, totally. Because mm-hmm. like when you're a kid and you're playing like imaginary friends or
yeah.
whatever, that's basically what writing is and what
yeah,
acting
and
is
film,
you know?
Yeah,
yeah,
it's playing.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're doing. We're building imaginary worlds.
Mm-hmm.
It is indeed like that, you know. We project our own reality, and
yeah.
I think that that's a very strong aspect of filmmaking in itself.
Yeah,
you know, we're basically simulating what our brain does for us.
Mm-hmm.
It's a cycle, you know.
It is.
And with that, I wanna get into something a little bit more personal about your lives and how you actually got into filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
And before filmmaking, if there was any other artistic exploration, what's your artistic background?
Ooh. Well, so my great grandmother was a really famous artist in Bulgaria, a painter, and she ran this like group of women painters, essentially. So I kind of grew up with art being an important part of my life. My parents are both psychologists, though, so they were kind of like, focus on academics and have art on the side. So I wanted to be an actress at a young age, and I kind of started pursuing that. And then in my last year of university, I realized that acting was not what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. I was like, but I still want to be involved in movies and film. Like, that's always been my passion too. So I grew up watching the weirdest movies with my dad. He's like obsessed with weird movies. My mom would walk in the room and be like, what are you watching?
Okay, now I know where you get your style from.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks, Dad. So yeah, I grew up always writing. I had diaries. We actually made a web series based on my diaries where our friend Chris McRoney is reading my diary entries like in a suit. Mm-hmm. You can check it out on YouTube. It's Dear Diary.
It's pretty funny.
It's fun. Yeah, we're going to do season 2 soon, I think.
So. right on. There you go. Do you write as well, Ali?
Yeah, I write a lot as well. I have so many scripts that I hang them on my wall just so I can like look at them and be like, okay, I need to work on this one today.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So what's the common thread for both of you, your stories? I feel every writer, every artist has a common theme that connects all of the projects that they do. What's the common theme? Have you ever thought about that? Is there a common theme? I see it's Latina saying, yeah, what is it? What is it?
I was thinking about this recently because I was like, what's my message? I realized all of my stories have an element of a woman's relationship to men.
Yeah.
And I think it's because I have such a close relationship with my dad, but I've had such bad dating experiences that I think I'm trying to figure out where the disconnect is for me. Mm. So all of my stories have an element of female with males around her.
Mm-hmm. I'm just going to touch on that for a second as well, because we were talking about this earlier, like film is very healing. So I feel like for you, like you're figuring out your voice and how to deal with things through your films and your scripts.
Totally.
For me, maybe it's not a common theme, but I have a common character. His name is Gherkin. I have him in like different elements of life, and maybe he's like kind of me in a way, not necessarily, but like I just have him in different situations, and like I said, a lot of my scripts actually are just from elements of my life, something that, is upsetting me, something that I can't stop talking about, something that the media can't stop talking about, or something that I'm very happy about. So I wouldn't say that there's always a theme. It's just whatever is inspiring me at the time. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I often write him in there because he's goofy.
Inspiration is another key word, huh? Opportunity, inspiration. We're building something over here. Very, very interesting. And somehow there is always, there seems to be that writing is a very personal affair, you know? Mm-hmm. How do you tackle that as a writer? It's just getting the juice out of your heart, brain, soul, mind, everything. How do you tackle that?
I don't even know. It is like what Ali said, it's therapy. You just sit and like spew it out.
But the thing about writing too that I've noticed is it's a lot of work. Like, you know, it's a process. It's an art process. So kind of it is healing, but at the same time you have to like remind yourself like this is still work. Like if this is what you want to do with your life as a career, you have to remind yourself this is work. And when you remind yourself that, it almost actually becomes harder because you feel more pushed
to do a good job. It's scary. I think the best thing for me with screenwriting is sharing it with other people. It was so scary to do that at first, but people are actually really nice. Most people. I've had a few people that I don't know.
and that'll always happen, you know. It's writing, you know, is teamwork. So even if you write by yourself, which I can think of an idea by myself, but a lot of the time I will like to sit down with somebody and co-write. I love co-writing. It's so fun to just like sit there and like make up this imaginary world with other people. It's so much fun.
Ali, do you seem to have do you feel you have a common theme around your writing?
Not necessarily, because when I was younger, I was very into horror, and then in film school, I went through my super cliche, I love art house, everything I make is very odd.
But
phase.
You're good at it.
And
you
then,
do it well.
And then now I'm in a phase where I'm like, I really like writing comedy now.
Okay.
So that's kind of where I'm at. Like, I feel like I've gone through, like, all of these dark stories and all of these things. And I, you know what? Actually, the world is, like, life is great, but I feel like there's a lot of negativity right now, or especially this year,
a lot of
in the States, yeah. too, and just all the news and stuff. And I just want to make things that make people laugh and feel good. Like, because mm-hmm. right now, I haven't really even been watching anything that's, like, serious. I just want to, like, when I watch a movie, I just want to get away and laugh for a second. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what I'm writing right now, is yeah. just happy things.
That's beautiful. There is a saying that goes, every revolution starts with a joke. And I think that's the, you know, the ability to have humor, that's, humor is, it's just such a strong pivotal point. Mm-hmm. So much underpins around humor.
Well, I have to say, though, I don't know how funny they are, because I laugh at my own scripts.
But that's,
your
that's,
stuff
that's,
is funny.
I can attest.
That's the way to go, you know? Yeah. Somebody else will feel that humor. If yeah. you have that, you mean someone else will have it, you know?
Yeah.
You got to trust yourself. Yeah. And that's another balance. How much do you trust yourself, and how much do you trust the environment around you?
Mm-hmm.
What's your take on that, Zlatina?
That can be hard. I have trust issues already. So trusting people with projects that I want to make and ideas that I have and stories that are so personal can be really, really hard. But you have to build it. Like mm-hmm. anything else, you have to build trust. And you have to just... The biggest thing I've learned with film is you just have to let go. I can be a control freak, and sometimes you just have to trust other people to do their jobs, and
yeah.
you just have to let it go.
That's
and
so
believe
true.
That things are going to work out.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. You really have to realize that it's teamwork. Like we were talking about painting, because I paint, and when I'm painting alone, mm-hmm. and it's just a process alone. And then when you're making a film, it's so much more. Like even if you're the writer or the director, you put so much heart into it, and then you have to like put it into other people's hands, mm-hmm. and that's so scary. But you have to let go, and you have to hope that you chose a crew that understands. That's kind of why. Like I was saying earlier, like once you find your hub of people, you should probably stay, because it's not easy to find other artists that you really connect with, especially like production designers that get your style, editors that understand your flow, mm-hmm. Producers that understand your creative process. You know, like it's just important to find these people, stick with them, and have trust in them. And it takes time, but it's totally worth it.
Trust, belief, faith, these are all very heavy words, but damn, it's we're getting there, you know, it's true. The creative process is probably the most dangerous process, you know? It's extremely dangerous, but that's also why we like it, I think, you know?
Mm-hmm.
We like to explore that uncomfortable zone, that uncomfortable forest filled with surprises.
I was talking to a friend of mine recently, and I felt kind of stuck with my writing, and she was like, well, I always go to what makes me feel uncomfortable, because mm-hmm. if I don't feel uncomfortable when I'm writing or working on a project, she's like, I know I'm not gonna grow artistically.
Mm-hmm. Oh wow.
So
that's also we need friction also, you know, to grow, to just create movement in general. You need that friction, you know. Do you agree with that, Ali?
I do agree with that. Like touching on that, like I need to what you said, your friend said, because I'm writing comedy, it's a little different, but I touch on things that make me embarrassed a lot,
mm-hmm.
or situations like that I've been in or that I've seen people in, and I just make a joke out of it, like laugh about it, so I can just like shrug it off. Because
I think that's the beauty of comedy.
That
it comes
is what
from
comedy
such
is,
a dark
right?
place.
Yeah, and comedy is a lot about reaction. Like, that's where the joke comes from, is the reaction. So, yeah, it's really about a lot of embarrassment is what comedy is a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, for sure. Yeah, I kind of lost where I was going.
you have to have humor in life, you know.
Yeah,
if you don't have humor, it's over, you know. Yeah. You need to build those wings to fly. If you always ground yourself, you're going to get lost, you know.
Yeah.
And it becomes limiting. But with that being said, I think it's time to take our second break.
Ooh.
Yeah, this is actually, again, soundtrack of Death Proof, a movie by Quentin Tarantino. The name of the song is Hold Tight. And right after that, we're going to go to the one-minute pitch and the Proust questionnaire, and we're going to wrap this whole burrito up. Everybody, enjoy. This is Hold Tight.
Stay close by me and hold tight, sing and shout, yes. just wrap around the belt and hold tight. Shut your eyes, girl, you set me up for zai. Just wrap around the bell and hold tight. Shut your eyes, girl, you set me up for zai.
Wow! Welcome back, everybody. This is Room Tone, the radio show. We take filmmaking's community to your ears, and here we are, just about to wrap this whole episode up with Ali Verubens, Latina Paceva, and I think it's time to get right into the one-minute pitch. Are you ready to make it happen?
Yes.
Are you ready?
Yes.
All right. So I'm gonna hit that clock, okay. And you guys go for it. You go for it. You ready?
Okay.
Awesome. And here we go.
Okay. So Ali and I are both really old at heart. We're old ladies, and we wanted to showcase our signature style. So after her tea shop is robbed, a 73-year-old woman goes after the robber to teach him a lesson.
Okay, so this is like, Taken meets Grace and Frankie, meets Land Before Time, meets Mr. Bean's Holiday, and meets like Saw 5, you know? Like
totally.
All the genres in one, like we just really want to, you know, hit all those beats. And
super casual, blood and guts.
Yeah, it's very casual. I think we're going to get Robert De Niro to be the old lady.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe get Steve Buscemi in it.
Yeah, he's going to be the robber,
yeah.
Of course.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be great. You're going to love it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we got 10 more seconds. Whoa. If you're okay, that's it. Yeah, it went by so quick.
Yeah, it went by so quick.
All right, so that being said, that was like, what is that, a dream feature-length movie? Is that it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
it'll
awesome.
Be a series, totally. I think.
Yeah.
Right on. Okay, I'll pin on that. Do you have a name for that in mind? We'll touch base on that.
Tea shop robbery.
Yeah. All right. Eyes open. Eyes open, everybody. Eyes and ears open. In fact, because, you know, we're going to jump right into the Proust questionnaire. Are you ready?
I'm nervous.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Let's go for it. Okay. Ooh. Okay. Interesting. Okay. Let me start right here. Question number one of the Proust questionnaire. What is your greatest extravagance?
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
that's
interesting.
Really intense.
That's an insane. Greatest extravagance in terms of, like, what do you, like...
Take it however you want to take it.
Okay.
This is how it goes.
I guess for me, I'm super vain. So my greatest extravagance is, like, makeup and, like, always having to have my makeup on. I don't know if that's...
Oh, man. I don't even really understand the question, to be honest. Greatest extravagance, like... Oh, man. That's hard. Yeah, I'm going to just say the same.
Okay.
Twins.
Yeah. Right on.
Second question of the Proust questionnaire. When and where were you happiest?
Oh, wow. I think about that a lot. Mm-hmm. For me, it's either anytime I'm dancing, I'm happiest, or... I don't know. I think I was happiest in university, to be honest, at SFU.
Really?
I had a really good time there. Yeah.
Okay.
I think I'd say I'm happiest when I'm on set directing. Oh. Because, like, when I get on set, I almost want to cry every time. It's so weird. I'm just so happy. I'd have to say that's what it is, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wonderful. And the that feeling right there, I think it goes back to a feeling of freedom for the both of you or not? What is it? Freedom?
Totally. Anytime I'm, like, really in the moment, mm-hmm. I'm happiest. Mm-hmm. I'm not worrying about anything else.
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
Forgetting the past and the future. How do you put yourself in that mindset? How do you forget about the past and the future?
I haven't learned yet. Doing things like dancing for me is like a meditation, so that gets me in the zone. Mm-hmm. Drawing, doodling, writing.
Mm-hmm. What genre of dancing?
I do pole dancing. It's a hobby.
Yeah, no, it's really cool.
There you go.
I think I meditate as well, not as much as I'd like to anymore, but it's a constant process learning how to just focus on one thing, especially in this generation. We're very like, oh, what's the next thing? What's the next thing? Because we have all these things at our fingertips and we're, yeah. But I don't know. I just think if it makes you happy, you usually tend to get a little more into it.
Interesting, for sure. There is a lot to it, but with that being said, I actually want to moonwalk to the third question of the Proust questionnaire. And this is something that pops out because you mentioned this before. And I want to ask you, what is the quality you most like in a man?
Oh, wow.
If you had asked me this when I was 16, I would have been like, oh, he has to be really hot. now, I just realized this. Like last week, he has to be someone I would want to be friends with. Mm-hmm. So if it's like a romantic interest, I would have to want to be friends with him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, that's true, because your partner should always be somebody that you look at as a friend as well. Funny question, but yeah, humor, man. Like, humor is so important to me. If I can't laugh with you, like, what is the point? Everybody has humor at some point, but... You have to be very goofy. Yeah. You have to totally get it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And with that being said, not necessarily in a romantic from a romantic point of view, but this fourth question is: what is the quality you most like in a woman?
I really appreciate women that I think a lot of the time women are pitted as like hating each other automatically, mm-hmm. which is so stupid because every woman I know has never, like, my relationships with women have never been like that. I think it's just an openness. So just like being open to talking about anything. And we're such sensitive beings naturally that I think it's really important to connect that way.
We are. Yeah. That's interesting that you said that, because as well on set, I notice a lot of people, if there's just a few girls, sometimes the guys think that you're pitted for no reason.
Yeah.
It's so interesting. But just like strong females. I just love strong females. I love like boss ladies. Mm-mm. They inspire me so much, which every female is great. But boss ladies, for sure. I love that. Like leaders.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I love that.
Okay. Is that where you want to eventually... Is that something you want to see yourself in? Is that something you want to become? Or you are yourself? You consider yourself? I'm just wondering to, you know, trying to understand a little better, you know.
Yeah, I would like to be a better producer and, yeah, like have a thriving company. That's what I want to be for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, the content is out there. The hunger is here. I can see it. I can sense it, that there is a lot of hunger to create content and a lot of positive vibes. Again, the greatest challenge, I think, is that, as we were talking about earlier, that onion aspect of humanity, you know, all those layers. And that's where I think we get trapped sometimes. We get trapped, or we trap someone else in there, and it gets tricky.
Yeah.
But with that being said, let's go to the fifth question of the Proust questionnaire.
Ooh.
And with this one, I like to ask this one because it sparks off in so many different directions. And we have time, actually, to talk this one through.
Okay.
And it goes, what is your greatest regret?
Oh, man. You first.
I have a funny one. kind of funny.
Go for it.
So I was on the bus one day I used to work at the Bay randomly when I was going through school, worked retail. I was on the bus and I was at the back of it. It was in the summer. It was really hot. I was super self-conscious because I sweat a lot. And so I'm sitting there and these kids get on. It's a summer camp and they're all screaming and yelling. And there was this one kid and he clearly had some behavioral issues and all the kids were picking on him. And this one girl, he was trying to talk to her normally. And she's like, oh my God, you spat on me, blah, blah, blah. And she told the camp counselors and I saw what had happened and he definitely didn't spit on her. And he got in trouble. And I wish that I had stepped in and said, No, I saw what happened. She's just picking on him. And I didn't. And I saw him sitting there and he was so upset. And I didn't do anything because I felt so self-conscious myself. Yeah. I felt so sweaty and I didn't want to talk to people. Oh, but like, wow. I want to find that kid now and be like, I'm so sorry.
That's my biggest regret. That's actually so deep though, that you're like self, yeah.
It still haunts me.
Oh, it projects onto a bigger theme for sure.
Yeah.
And I think it translates into your nature as a storyteller or writer.
Yeah. Maybe, yeah.
Telling the truth, telling the story that is not being told.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
There you go. That's an interesting link.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. Then Ali, how about you?
My biggest regret. I used to be really, really quiet. Like, I'm still quite quiet. And like, I mean, at the start of this podcast, I was like a little shaky and nervous. It takes me a second to get into things. But when I was younger, I was super, super quiet and shy and I didn't put myself out there enough. And that is my biggest regret, because when I moved to Vancouver, I was like, okay, well, now I don't know anybody. Now I need to actually put myself out there so I can make friends and have these new experiences, especially if I want to direct. You really have to be a people person. And I think my biggest regret is just not pushing myself enough as a kid and not being as outgoing as I should have been. But that being said, I've learned a lot from being that person, because when I'm around people like that, I can try to help them come out of their shell a little bit more, because it's like, I totally understand what you're going through. Yeah.
And there's something to be said for like the strength of being quiet and just observing too. I think that really helps you as a creative, because you notice things that other people who are like gabbing away don't notice.
Yeah, I notice a lot of mannerisms in people, and I notice like people who are like sitting alone in places. It makes me very sad.
Me too. Like,
I really feel it. Really feel that. So, I think that can actually help you with your writing and directing, because you are observing a lot more when you're not talking. Mm-hmm. There's like this saying, I can't remember it, and I'm going to say it like totally wrong, but just when you're talking, you're not listening. And so people who talk a lot more, they're not actually observing what everybody else is feeling or thinking, and they're not observing the other people around you that isn't in your hub of where you are at the time. So
I think there's a TED Talk about that. It's like the power of introverts. Mm. It's a good one. I don't know who did it, but
gotta listen to that.
Watch it, yeah.
Very interesting, especially because you said a very powerful thing. And in there, in what you said, you mentioned feel. You observe what people feel.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that that's the core, you know. Somehow humanity is forgetting how to feel.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why there is so much pain around. Because we're forgetting to feel each other, but we're forgetting to feel ourselves as well.
You know what? That's really interesting as well. And I think that goes right back to social media again. Because you can be behind a computer and you can say these things or think these things. But you're not knowing how this... You have to see reaction to understand emotion. And if it's something that's online, you're not seeing what their face looks like when they're saying this. And you're not seeing how you're... how you're making them feel. And I think that's so bad.
We're losing our empathy.
Yeah.
Like, it's empathy is so important. Mm-hmm. And
there is something
really
about when the eyes meet, that's something that social media is killing. And that's, I think, where the beauty of life really, really lives, you know?
Yeah.
And I feel we have to celebrate that more and more and more and more and really go and re-explore the whole aspect of connection all over again.
Oh, totally.
But before we wrap this whole thing up, I want to ask to the both of you, how can people reach you?
Ooh.
come find me. Just kidding, please. I'm nervous. I'm socially anxious. You can, probably best place is Instagram, at Little Z Productions, LittleZee Productions.
Mm-hmm. For me, yeah, Studio Niche Productions on Instagram or StudioNicheProductions.com, except my reel is on lock because I have a lot of films and commercials that aren't released yet. So if you do want to see it, you can totally email me for the password, or if you want to work, I don't know, you can email me and I'll send you that. But yeah, it's on lock, so don't be like frightened and be like, oh, there's like nothing here.
Right on. We can put those links in the description of the podcast as well.
Awesome.
As far as the live radio show is concerned, we're about to wrap it all up and we're about to go there and enjoy a beautiful sunny day here in Vancouver. Any advice for filmmakers out there?
Just do it.
Don't doubt yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just keep making your stuff and don't give up, because a lot of people feel like they need to give up. And why? Just don't be discouraged. That's the main thing.
Yes. Because it's never going to be perfect.
It's never going to be. Mm-hmm. And it's always going to be hard. Just know that. But it's always going to be great. That's the great part about it. Yeah.
Awesome. And with that, we're going to wrap up take 25 of Roomtone, actually.
Wow,
take 25.
Yes.
And we're going to go and fly off in the distance in a beautiful day. It was a pleasure to have Alibero Benz, Latina Paceva here on Roomtone,
so
the radio show.
You.
Thank you for coming over. And I'll catch you around. Everybody, enjoy life and life will enjoy you. Ciao, ciao.
This is CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, broadcasting from unceded Musqueam territory on the University of British Columbia campus. Hello and welcome to Synchronicity. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and today